But I have given, you will say. Then you must not cease from doing this. For then only will you be excused from giving when you have no longer the wherewithal to give, and you yourself want for everything. But as long as you have anything, even though you have given 100 times, and as long as there is still one who hungers, there is no excuse for you. But when you lock up your grain, and raise the price of it, and take a hand in the other evil practices of trading, what hope of salvation can you have? You have been commanded to give freely of your food to those who hunger, but some of you do not give it even at a just price. Christ emptied himself of his glory for your sake, but you do not think him deserving of a little bread. While your dog is packed with food, Christ is weak with hunger. While your servant is surfeited with abundance, your Lord and his Lord goes without the food he needs. Are these the deeds of a friend? Be reconciled to God, for these are rather the actions of his enemies, of those who are against him. We should be ashamed of ourselves because of all the benefits we have received from him and are yet to receive. And should a poor man come to us and beg us for assistance, let us receive him with kindness of soul, comforting him and uplifting him with our words, that we in turn may receive the same from both God and man. The rule of conduct regarding our neighbor. For all things, therefore, whatsoever you would that man should do to you, do you also to them. This law contains nothing that is heavy, nothing tedious. What you would have done to you, it says, this let you do. Let the giving be mutual. The law does not say what you would not that men should do to you, let you not do this. It says more, for this latter phrase would mean only to abstain from evil doing. But Christ's law is that we also do good, and in this the other law is contained. Nor does the Lord say, let you also wish them, but do you to them. And what is the gain? For this is the law of the prophets. Do you wish that others should show mercy to you? Let you show mercy to them. Do you wish to be forgiven? Then let you also forgive. Do you wish to hear no evil spoken of you? Then do not speak evil of others. Do you wish to secure the approval and praise of others? Then bestow it yourself. Do you desire that no man shall rob you? Then rob no man. You see how he makes clear to us that virtue is a kind of natural good, and that we have little need of outward laws or teachers. For in that which we desire to receive or not to receive from our neighbor, we impose a law upon ourselves. So if you do to another what you would not have done to yourself, or if you would have something done for you, but which you would not do for another, you are condemning yourself by your own standard, and you cannot be excused on the grounds that you did not know what you ought to have done. Let us then, I beg of you, give serious thought to this, that we who lay down this law within our own minds, reading it so clearly and distinctly written within us, must always be to our neighbors as we would have them be to us, so that we may live in peace in this life, and may attain to the blessings of the life to come, through the grace and loving mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom with the Father and the Holy Ghost be their glory, honor, and empire, now and forever, world without end. Amen. The 8th Sunday after Pentecost. The Gospel of the Sunday, according to Luke. At that time Jesus spoke to his disciples the following parable. There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said to him, How is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for now thou canst be steward no longer. And the steward said within himself, What shall I do, because my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship? To dig I am not able, to beg I am ashamed. I know what I will do, that when I shall be removed from the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. Therefore, calling together every one of his Lord's debtors, He said to the first, How much dost thou owe my lord? But he said, 100 barrels of oil. And he said to him, Take thy bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, And how much dost thou owe? Who said, 100 quarters of wheat. He said to him, Take thy bill, and write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward, for as much as he had done wisely, for the children of this world are more prudent in their generation than the children of light. And I say to you, Make unto you friends of the mammon of iniquity, that when you shall fail, they may receive you into everlasting blessings. The words of the Gospel. Exposition from the Catena Aurea. There was a certain rich man who had a steward. When he had, in the course of 3 parables, rebuked those who murmured because he received sinners, the Lord spoke a 4th parable and a 5th, on the giving of alms and on frugality. For it is in most fitting order that after he had preached on repentance, the prodigal son, he should preach on almsgiving. Hence we read, And he said unto his disciples, There is a certain erroneous opinion inborn in mortal men that increases evil doing and lessens good. It is the belief that whatever comes into our possession in this life, we possess it as masters of it, and so when the chance arises, we seize these things as ours by special right. The contrary is true, for we are not placed in this life as lords in our own houses, but as guests and strangers, brought hither whether we would or not, and at a time not of our choosing. He who is now rich in a moment is a beggar. Therefore, whoever you may be, know that you are but an administrator of things that are another's, and that upon you has been bestowed but the right of their brief and passing use. Cast them from your soul, the pride of dominion, and put on instead the modesty and humility of a steward. The steward is the manager of a farm, and receives his title from the farm. An administrator, however, is the dispenser of the fruits of the property, of the money, and of all the master owns. From this we learn that we are not ourselves masters, but rather the stewards of another's possessions, and that when we do not administer wealth in accord with the will of the master, but abuse for our own pleasure what has been entrusted to us, we are unjust stewards. Hence, and the same was accused. Meanwhile, he is removed from his stewardship. For we then read that, And he called him and said to him, Daily the Lord cries out to us similar things, through the events of our life, showing us a man in the full possession of health at noon, and before evening he is lifeless. Another dying at his evening meal, and so in various ways are we relieved of our stewardship. But a faithful dispenser who is untroubled in his mind regarding his stewardship desires with Paul rather to be dissolved and to be with Christ. He, however, whose desires are earthly ones, is troubled at the thought of his going forth. And so we read, And the steward said within himself, What shall I do? To be feeble in action is the consequence of a life of sloth. Had he been accustomed to labor, he would not now be fearful. But if we take the parable allegorically, there is no time for labor after we have departed this life. The present life is the time for doing what was laid upon us to do. The future is our time of reward. If you have not labored here, in vain do you make provision for the future, nor will it help you to beg. We have an example of this in the foolish virgins, who unwisely begged of the wise virgins, but came back without anything. Each one has put on his own manner of life as an inner garment, and it is not to be put off or to be changed with another. The unjust steward, however, arranged for the cancelling of debts, contriving with his fellow servants a way out of the consequences of his own evil deeds. For we read, I know what I will do, that when I shall be removed. For as often as a man, seeing his own end approaching, lightens the burden of his own sins by some kind act to others, either by remitting the debts of a debtor, or by giving in abundance to the poor, bestowing the things of his master, he is making friends for himself of many who will give testimony of truth on his behalf before the judge, and not with words simply, but by making known his good deeds, and what is more, they will secure for him by their testimony an abode where he may find rest. But nothing is ours, all things are but part of the riches of God. Hence there follows, therefore calling together every one of his Lord's debtors. A barrel, in Greek, is a measure containing 3 urns. An urn equals 2 gallons. But he said, 100 barrels of oil. And he said to him, take thy bill and write 50, that is, wiping out half the debt. Then he said to another, and how much dost thou owe? A quarter contains 30 bushels. Who said, 100 quarters of wheat. And he said, take thy bill and write 80, wiping out a fifth of the debt. It may be simply taken in this sense. Whoever relieves a poor man's need, either by supplying the half of it or a fifth part of it, will be blessed with the rewards of mercy. That he told the debtor of the 100 barrels of oil to write down 50, and of the 100 quarters of wheat to write 80 instead, means, I believe, that what each Jew gave to the priests and Levites should be given more abundantly in the Church of Christ, that where they give a tenth, let these latter give a half, as Zacchaeus did of his goods, or at least double the tenth, let them give a fifth, so that they shall abound more in their giving than the Jews. And the Lord commended the unjust steward. The steward whom the master deprived of his stewardship, the Lord here praises, in that he made provision for himself for the future. So it is that the Lord commended him for as much as he had done wisely. Nevertheless, we are not to imitate him in all he did, for we should never practice any deceit against the Lord, that from this deception we may give alms. Although the Gentiles say that prudence is a virtue, and define it as the practical understanding of what is good, bad, or indifferent, the discernment of what we ought do and ought not do, we should consider whether this description has one meaning or many. For we are told that the Lord established the heavens by prudence, and it is evident that because the Lord established the heavens by it, that prudence is good. But we are also told in Genesis, according to the Septuagint, that the serpent was the most subtle of all the beasts of the earth, where prudence is not spoken of as a virtue, but as craftiness, inclining its possessor towards evil. And so, he perhaps used the word commended, not in the true sense of commendation, but used it in a lower sense, as when we say someone is to be commended in trivial and indifferent matters, or as a clash of wits or sharpness of understanding meets with approval because of the mental vigor displayed. On the other hand, these similitudes are recounted that we may understand that if he could be praised by the Lord who has acted deceitfully, how much more will they please the Lord who fulfill the good works he has commanded. The children of this world also are not called wiser, but more prudent than the children of light, and this not absolutely and simply, but in their generation. For there follows, for the children of this world are more prudent in their generation. They are called children of light, and the children of this world, who are also called the children of the kingdom, and the children of perdition. For the works a man does, of these he is known as their son. By the children of this world he means those who give their minds to the pleasant things of this world. The children of light are those who out of divine love deal in spiritual riches. And in human affairs we find that we act in all things with prudence and take great pains so that when we withdraw from active life, we shall have a secure refuge. But in the management of divine things we do not look ahead and consider what may happen to us in the future life. That they may find something in their hand after death. Before death let men place their riches in the hands of the poor. Accordingly we read, and I say to you, make unto you friends of the mammon of iniquity. What the Hebrews call mammon, we call riches. Therefore it is as if he said, Make unto you friends of the riches of iniquity. Now some persons, misunderstanding these words, seize what belongs to others, and by this means give alms to the poor, and think that in doing this they do what is commanded. This notion must be corrected. Give alms out of your own just labors, for you shall not corrupt Christ your judge. If from the plunder of a poor man you were to give anything to a judge, that he might give sentence in your favor, and if the judge were to do this, such is the force of justice that you would be dissatisfied with yourself. Do not make a god for yourself after this fashion, for he is the fountain of justice. Do not then give alms from the fruits of usury and interest. I am speaking to Christians to whom we give the body of Christ. And if you have such money, it is through evil doing you possess it. Let you no longer do evil. Zacchaeus said, The half of my goods I give to feed the poor. See how he runs to make friends by means of the mammon of iniquity. And lest he should be held wicked on other grounds, he says, And if I have wronged any man of anything, I restore him fourfold. There is another interpretation also. The mammon of iniquity is all the riches of the world, wherever they come from. For if you seek for true riches, they are those in which Job, though naked, abounded, when his heart was full towards God. For these others are called the riches of iniquity, because they are not true riches, for they are full of poverty, and if ever liable to the risk of loss. For if they were true riches, they would bring you security. Or they are called the riches of iniquity because they are riches only to the iniquitous and to those who place their hopes in them and the fullness of their happiness. But when they are possessed by the just, they constitute a sum of money, but to those for whom riches are solely spiritual and heavenly, they are not riches. He said the mammon of iniquity because avarice corrupts our dispositions by the various enticements riches offer, so that we are willing to serve riches. Or should you inherit a patrimony, you receive what has been amassed by unjust persons. For among many predecessors it must be that one will be found who has unjustly taken what was another's. But let us suppose your father has not taken anything unjustly. Nevertheless, whence do you receive the money? If you say, From myself, you are ignorant of God, not recognizing your Creator. If you say, From God, tell us for what reason you received it. Is not the earth the Lord's, and the fullness thereof? If then what is ours belongs to our common Lord, it will also belong to our fellow servants. These, therefore, are called the riches of iniquity, which the Lord has given to meet the needs of our brethren and fellow servants, but we hold them fast to ourselves. It became us that from the beginning we give all things to the poor, and though through becoming unjust stewards we have held on unjustly to what was given to us to help others, we ought not continue in this cruelty, but should give to the poor that they may receive us into everlasting dwellings. For there follows that when you shall fail, they may receive you into everlasting dwellings. But if we, through their good will, obtain everlasting dwellings, we ought to consider that in giving we are making offerings to patrons rather than bestowing gifts on the needy. For who are they who shall possess everlasting dwellings but the saints of God? And who are they who shall be received by them into everlasting dwellings, if not they who minister to their want, giving cheerfully whatever it is they stand in need of? They are the least of Christ's brethren, who have left all things and have followed him, and have distributed what they had among the poor, so that they may serve God without earthly ties, and lift once more as wings the shoulders now free of this world's burdens. We are not to regard as debtors of God those by whom we wish to be received into eternal tabernacles. For in this place the just and holy are signified, who bring those in there who shared with them their earthly possessions when they were in need. Or again, make unto you friends of the mammon of iniquity, that by giving to the poor we may find favor with the angels and the other holy ones. Note that he did not say that they may receive you into their own everlasting mansions, for it is not they who receive you. So when he said, make unto you friends, he added, of the mammon of iniquity, showing us that their friendship alone will not obtain protection for us unless we are accompanied by good works, unless we, with a pure heart, empty ourselves of riches unjustly gained. The giving of alms is therefore the most skilled of all the arts, for it does not build us houses of brick, but yields us eternal life. In each of the arts we need the assistance of others, but when we ought to show compassion we have need of nothing save our will alone. In this way Christ has taught those who abound in riches to love greatly the friendship of the poor, and to lay up treasure for themselves in heaven. For he knew the sloth of the human soul, how they who are given to the pursuit of riches will not devote themselves to any work of charity for those in need. Saint Basil, Bishop and Doctor, I will pull down my barns. Trials are of two kinds. Either affliction will test our souls as gold is tried in a furnace, and make trial of us through patience, or the very prosperity of our lives will oftentimes, for many, be itself an occasion of trial and temptation. For it is equally difficult to keep the soul upright and undefeated in the midst of afflictions, as to keep oneself from insolence and pride in prosperity. We have an example of the first kind of trial in the blessed Job, that great and undefeated champion who with unshaken courage and immovable purpose breasted every assault of the devil as they came against him with the force of a torrent, and the more each attempt of the enemy appeared irresistible, the higher his patience rose superior to every trial. Of the second kind, we have many examples besides this rich man of whom we have just read, who had much wealth and hoped to have much more. And the most kind God did not in the beginning condemn him for his thankless soul. Rather, each day he added new riches to what he already had, to see if when his soul had at length attained fullness he might then awaken to liberality and to kindness. For he said, the land of a certain rich man brought forth plenty of fruits. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will do. I will pull down my barns, and I will build greater. Why then was the land of this man so rich, he who would do nothing of good with the abundance that was coming to him? That we might see more clearly the forbearance of God, whose goodness extends itself even to such persons, since he maketh his sun to rise upon the good and the bad, and raineth upon the just and the unjust. But such goodness of God brings greater chastisement upon the wicked. He pours out his rains upon the fields cultivated by avaricious hands. He gives us the sun that warms a seed and multiplies it into an abundance of fruit. And it is from God such blessings are received: fertile lands, a fitting climate, seeds that are fruitful, the work of the oxen, and all things else by which the tilled earth becomes fruitful. What kind of person is this man? His nature is bitter, hating his own kind, of an unyielding greed. This was the return he was making his benefactor for those blessings. He had no thought for those of his own nature. It did not enter his mind to give what remained over when his barns were full to those who were in need. He gave no heed to the words that commanded, do not withhold from doing good who is able. And again, let not mercy and truth leave thee, and also deal thy bread to the hungry. He paid no heed to all the prophets, to all the teachers who cried out to him. His barns were near to bursting with the great quantities of corn he had stowed there, but his greedy heart was not yet filled. for he was ever adding new crops to the earlier ones, and the mass swelling upwards through the yearly increase, he found himself in this predicament of avarice, that he could not let go of the first yield, nor find room to store the last. So his deliberations were without end, and his decisions kept changing. What shall I do? Who cannot feel compassion for a nature so obsessed? Wretched in his abundance, miserable in his good fortune, and yet more miserable for the blessings to come. For him, the earth does not yield harvests, but sighs and groans, not fruits in plenty, but cares, grief, grave anxieties. He grieves like those who are destitute. Is not this what he cries who is in anguish through want? What shall I do? Where shall I get food? Where shall I find clothing? This is what the rich man is saying. Is not his heart tormented, devoured with anxiety? For what rejoices others brings pain to the avaricious. He does not rejoice at his barn stuffed full. The overflowing riches his barns cannot hold torment his soul, lest perhaps overflowing from his barns they bring some of their blessing to those in want. To me, his anguish of soul seems to resemble that of those who are given to the vice of gluttony, who would rather burst themselves eating than leave a crumb for the hungry. Recall to mind your benefactor, O man. Be mindful of yourself, who you are, of what things have been placed in your charge, from whom you receive them, and why you were favored above others. You have been made a servant of the good God, an administrator for your fellow servant. Do not imagine that all these fruits were prepared for your stomach. Regard what you hold within your own hands as though it belonged to others. For a little while these things will give you pleasure, then flowing away from you they disappear, and then you must with exactness render an account of them. But you seek with bolts and bars to keep them all hidden, and you shut them up under seals and watch them anxiously, and you think within yourself, what shall I do? What shall I do? Offhand, I would say, I shall fill the souls of the hungry. I shall open my barns, and I shall send for all who are in want. I shall be like Joseph, in proclaiming the love of my fellow man. I shall cry out with a mighty voice, come to me, all of you who have need of bread. For of the abundance that divine love has given to me, let each of you take according to his need. You do not do this. Rather, you are so in dread lest other men should have a share in the fruits you possess, that you take thought within your unworthy soul, not as to how you will give the poor what they hunger for, but how you, taking everything, may deprive all others of the help of them. They stood near him who would demand his soul of him, and he took thought within himself of food. That very night he was snatched away, when he had begun to imagine to himself the delights and the enjoyment of his possessions. It was permitted him to take thoughts of everything, to make known openly what was in his mind, that he might receive a sentence worthy of his character. Beware that the same does not happen to you. For to this end were these things written, that we avoid doing similar things. Imitate the earth, O man, and let you also bear fruit as it does, so that you may not be lower than the senseless creation. It nourishes its fruits, not for its own delight, but to serve you. And you, whatever fruits of beneficence you do yield, you gather up for yourself, for the grace of good works and their reward is returned to the giver. Have you given something to a person in need, what you have given becomes yours, and is returned to you with an increase. And as the wheat that falls to the earth brings increase to the one who has thrown it there, so the bread that you give to the hungry will later bring you a great gain. Therefore, let the end of your earthly tilling be the beginning of your heavenly sowing. Sow for yourselves in justice. Why then are you anxious? Why do you torment yourself striving to shut up riches behind bricks and mortar? A good name is better than many riches. Should you desire riches because of the honor they bring you, consider how much more it honors you to be called the father of innumerable children than to have a purse filled with gold. And whether you will it or not, you will leave the goal behind, while the glory that is born of good works you carry back to the Lord. Where standing before our common judge, all the people shall call you their nourisher and their benefactor, and give you those other names that signify kindness and humanity. Do you not see those at the theater, at the public contests, at the fights with beasts, those who scatter their wealth for the sake of applause from the common people around them, of those whose very appearance is abhorrent? And you are mean and grasping and spending the little by which you may attain to such endless glory? The Lord himself shall praise you. The angels shall praise you with him, and all who are gathered from the whole world shall call you blessed. Eternal glory, a crown of justice, the kingdom of heaven, these shall he receive, who was a just dispenser of the things which perish. Have you no anxiety, despising the good things laid up for you in hope, because of your eagerness for the things of this present life? Come then, give out of your riches. Become splendid and generous in bestowing your riches on the needy. Let it be said of you, he hath distributed, he hath given to the poor. His justice remaineth forever and ever. Do not take advantage of those in want to sell dearly. Beware of waiting for a famine before you open up your barns. For he that hideth up corn shall be cursed among the people. Do not look to a famine to make money, nor to a common want for your private gain. Do not become a dealer in human misery. Do not try to make money out of the anger of God. Do not torment the wounds of the afflicted with your cruel whips. You with your eyes ever on money, do you never take a look at your fellow man? You know well the face of a coin, and you can tell a true from a false one, but you know not your brother in his time of need. The bright glitter of gold delights you, but you never think of with what groans, what execrations the poor pursue you. How can I bring their sufferings before your eyes? Consider one among them. He stands there looking upon him in his miserable home. He sees no money in his purse, nor any hope of it. He looks at his clothes, his poor tools, or the other few articles that form the belongings of the poor. In all, they are worth but a few coins. What will he do? His eyes then come to rest upon his own little ones, as if here he may, by taking them to the market and exposing them for sale, hold back that death that now hangs over all of them. Consider, I beg you, the anguish struggle within him, between the hunger that devours them and the Father's love. Hunger threatens them with a miserable death, but nature shudders, tells him rather to die with his children. Now resolved to act, now refusing, he at last gives way, forced by want and an implacable hunger. What thoughts now rise in the mind of the father? Whom will he first sell? Which of them will the corn seller look at? Must it be my eldest? But I must not put to shame his rights as the eldest. Shall I sacrifice my youngest? His tender age torments me, unable yet to understand this tragedy. He has the face of both his mother and his father. He is fit for study, for learning. Oh, dread misery! On which of them must I inflict this terrible wrong? On which of them shall I impose the life of a beast? How can I forget my own nature? If I keep them all with me, one by one I shall see them die of hunger. If I sell one, how shall I face the eyes of those left? I who am now guilty in their eyes of treachery and betrayal. How shall I remain in my house, deprived of my own act of my own children? How shall I come to the table furnished at their price? At length, with tears, the father goes to sell the dearest loved among his children. But you do not bend before the face of such agony. No thought of nature enters your mind. Hunger drives a suffering creature, but you hold out and play him and prolong his agony. He offers as the price of food his heart's blood. Your hands that drag riches from the deeps of his pain, not alone do you not tremble in fear, but with them you haggle over the price. To gain more, you offer less. by every trick you look to add to the unhappy man's affliction. Tears do not move you to pity, nor his groans of anguish soften your heart. You are immovable and implacable. Money fills your mind. You dream of it. Sleeping and waking, you hunger for it. Just as the insane see no reality, only the vision that torments them, so your soul, obsessed by avarice, sees all things as gold, all things as silver. You look more readily at gold than at the sun. You would change everything into gold, and this you try to do with all your power. What scheme will you not set in motion for the sake of gold? For you, wheat becomes gold, wine grows into gold, wool is woven into gold. All that is bought and sold, every human activity brings you gold. Gold itself brings forth gold when you multiply it at interest. And there is no sufficiency, no end to your greed. We sometimes let greedy children fill themselves with what they crave for, as fullness will bring disgust with what they were eager for. But it is not so with a miser. The more he is fed, the more he hungers. If riches abound, set not your heart upon them. You hold back what overflows, and you stop up every outlet. Then, held back and grown stagnant, what use do you make of them? They break through the banks that restrain them, and overflowing they destroy their owner's barns and level them flat like an overwhelming enemy. Will he build new ones, you ask? He is uncertain whether or not to leave the ruins to his successor. For were he to cut off, he would pass away more speedily than the new barns could be replaced by his greedy industry. And so this man comes to an end that befits his own evil mind. You, if you will hear me, opening wide all the doors of your storehouses, give full outlet to your riches. And just as a wide stream is distributed through the fruitful earth by many channels, so let your riches flow, that by many ways you may reach the homes of the poor. Wells, when they are drawn from, flow forth in a purer and more abundant stream. Where they are in disuse, they grow foul. And so do riches grow useless, left idle and unused in any place. But moved about, passing from one person to another, they serve the common advantage and bear fruit. And what praise they would give you upon whom you had bestowed kindness. And this is something you must beware of despising. How great is the reward of the just judge in whom you have confidence. Keep ever before your mind the example of this rich man, who, keeping firm hold of the possessions he already had, was also anxious about those to come to him, and uncertain whether he would be alive tomorrow. He anticipated the morrow by sinning today. No one had yet come begging to him, and yet beforehand he shows himself unyielding. He had not yet gathered in his harvest, and already he has been condemned because of his greed with regard to it. The earth had brought forth fruits in plenty. The crops were standing thick in the fields. The grape hung heavy from the vines. The olive abundant and filled with richness. And every tree held forth its promise of precious fruit. He alone is neither joyous nor fruitful. He has not yet got hold of his harvest, and already he is envious of the hungry. And what dangers lie in wait for the fruits before he has gathered them in? For often they are struck by hail, and heat may wither them in his hands, or the rain bursting untimely from the clouds leave them worthless. Why then do you not pray to the Lord that he may bring his bounty to fulfillment? You rather make yourself still more unworthy of receiving before you receive what you hope for. You speak to yourself in secret, but your words are weighed in heaven, and because of this you will receive an answer from there. And what do you say to yourself? Soul, thou hast much goods laid up. Eat, drink, make good cheer. What folly! Had you the soul of a pig, what more could you say to it? Are you so beast-like, so ignorant of the delights of the soul, that you offer it only the pleasures of the body, that you destine for the soul what the pit will receive? If it has virtue, if it is full of good actions, if it is joined to God through the desire of Him, then indeed it has much goods laid up, and may rejoice with a joy that is worthy of the soul. But you, because you know no joy but earthly ones, and because your belly is your god, and you are wholly of the flesh, and the slave of your passions, you hear yourself called by a fitting name, and no man says this to you, but God says it to you, Thou fool, this night do they require thy soul of thee, and whose shall these things be which thou hast provided? Better eternal punishment than this derision of your folly. The one who in a little while is to be snatched from this life and led away, what is he thinking of in his own mind? I will pull down my barns. You will do rightly. I would say the same myself. For well worthy of the destruction are the barns of injustice. Tear down with your own hands what you have so unjustly built up. Destroy those granaries from which no one returns comforted. Throw down the roofs, demolish the walls. Expose the withered corn to the sun. Lead from their prison the riches held fast in bonds. Open to the world the dark caves of mammon. I will pull down my barns and build greater ones. And when you fill these up, what next do you plan? Will you destroy these too and build again? What more senseless than so to labor without end? Diligently building and diligently destroying again. You have barns ready if you want them, the houses of the poor. Lay up treasure for yourself in heaven. What you store there, the moth will not consume, nor rust devour, nor thieves break in and steal. When I have these new barns filled, you say, then I will distribute something to the poor. You have given yourself a long time to live. Take care that the appointed day does not, coming swift, forestall you. And promises of that sort are not very helpful, and an indication of a perverse heart rather than of kindness. For you promise, not that you will afterwards fulfill, but to relieve yourself of a present embarrassment. What keeps you from giving now? There are no hungry, perhaps. Are your barns not full? Is the price not ready? Is the law of God not plain to you? The hungry are dying before your face. The naked are stiff with cold. The man in debt is held by the throat. And you put off your alms till another day. Listen to Solomon's words. Do not say, Go and come again, and tomorrow I will give to thee, when thou canst give now. Thou knowest not what the day to come may bring forth. What good counsel you are despising by shutting up your ears beforehand with avarice, and what thanks you should have offered to the most merciful God, how cheerful you should be, how joyful because of the honor he has given you, namely, that you need not go knocking at the doors of other people, but that they must come knocking at yours. Instead, you are sullen and repellent. You turn away from those you meet, lest you be forced to let even a morsel escape your clutches. You have only one phrase, I have nothing to give, I am a poor man. You are indeed poor, and in need of every good. You are poor in love for your fellow man, poor in humanity, poor in faith in God, poor in the hope of eternity. Make your brothers sharers of your grain, and what may wither tomorrow, give to the needy today. For it is greed of the most horrible kind to deny to the starving even what you must soon throw away. Please go to side B.